C1C. Number 5A.
We were considering where the chapter on creation comes in, and so we could see that in order to see the place value of a chapter, we had to see the bigger framework within that chapter appears, therefore within the whole textbook, and so we are contemplating what chapters were prerequisites for arriving at the ninth chapter, and we quickly ran through the chapter 1 to 6. So we come now to the seventh chapter, and we still can define for ourselves what the chapter must be when we think that it is in that vertical column of the Christ translation, still Christ translating itself. Now at the horizontal we come to Christianity in Christian Science, which is man and humanity, the physical man, and therefore we can see what that chapter must tell us. It must therefore say that God comes to man, to the physiological man, and must translate him back into the idea man. Would you see that this would be on the horizontal, the improvement, the exaltation in Christianity as man, and therefore that chapter on physiology just shows how the Christ translates mortal man, physiological man, biological man, the psychological man back into the awakening that man is idea. This is done in those two big parts I have been showing in the structure book. The first part showing that under the impact of the Christ, the physical concept of man had to disappear. And then in the second part showing that under that impact of the Christ, the true idea of man is awakened, and we begin to see that there is something more about man than just the bodily man, but that there is the immortal man as idea being born. She does not, therefore, there define what man is and the whole nature of man, because that would be at the point of Christianity as such. She only shows here that under the impact of the Christ, a translation takes place out of the physiological man back to the recognition and to awakening that man is idea. If we go a step further and come to the eighth chapter, you can easily now define what the eighth chapter must show. Again, if it is the translation from God to man, that's the vertical. And if on the horizontal, science has the meaning of scientific understanding, of scientific consciousness, then we can see that what happens at that point of intersection is to show, in Footsteps of Truth, that under the impact of the Christ, consciousness changes from a unscientific consciousness to a scientific consciousness. That is taking place there. So that through that whole chapter we feel that the unscientific constituents of consciousness are being translated back into the scientific constituents of consciousness, and shows what really constitutes a scientific consciousness, and therefore then showing how step by step human consciousness, unscientific consciousness, gives place to the scientific consciousness. Yes, this would be the great message here in the Christ, and you can see that whole vertical, all four chapters, have therefore that great tone, first of the first translation of God coming to idea, and then in the human, the retranslation, translating everything that is wrong back to the divine idea. So you have translation and retranslation, therefore a great exemplification of Mrs. Eddy's translation on page 115 and 16 as the translation of mortal mind and the translation of, the first one as the scientific translation of immortal mind, and second, the scientific translation of mortal mind back into the divine mind, so that all those four chapters show that translation and retranslation. It shows in animal magnetism that there is, first of all, a power from God to man, which is able to retranslate evil anyway. Then in the sixth chapter, she shows that this translation takes place by translating mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love to the point where it retranslates the false system of reference back, namely mortal mind back into mind, matter back into spirit, sense testimony back into soul, then the various concepts of natural science back into the science of spirit, then translating a dead ritual Christianity back into the Christianity that is alive, and in medicine, translating really the belief that matter has a healing effect and is a medicine and a remedy back into truth. When we come to physiology, we have seen that translation and retranslation is touching man. At the point of Christianity, we are always at the point of man, and therefore is retranslating mortal man back to the immortal idea of man. And in Footsteps of Truth, we have the translation and retranslation by showing how the Christ translates a unscientific structure consciousness back into a scientific consciousness. So we have here always these great phases of the first and second translation. Which then brings us now to the chapter on creation, the chapter which we want to consider. And with that chapter on creation, Mrs. Eddy starts the third four chapters, the Christianity chapters, which have the accent or the focal point on idea. And you can see that through the Christ chapter she has translated God to the point of idea, and now she has to consider what the realm of idea is. So these next four chapters have all to do with the realm of idea. And the word naturally here would be, again, when we have a point of intersection, of accepting really the realm of ideas as the true realm. This would be now the point of intersection of creation, and therefore that whole chapter would have to tell us and show us how this great epitome of accepting really the proposition that all is idea is being accomplished. Therefore, by saying that, we have already pinpointed the overall epitome for the chapter, and now we can ask ourselves, but how did we ever arrive at the insight that the whole textbook has a structure, and that each chapter has a scientific and systematic place value within that structure. That naturally had to be first seen through correct text interpretation. We naturally had no indication that those 16 chapters would have that layout. Therefore, we had to use the inductive method, that goes out from the text, from the given text, and through right interpretation arrives at the principle of the layout. And that naturally was a work that had to be done and can only be done if one has a really good tonality of the divine system of reference. As it is already done, I still want to show you what was the procedure that is necessary in order to arrive at the text interpretation of a chapter. So I speak quickly about the procedure of text interpretation when we read a chapter. We have seen that we should always go out from the whole. Therefore, if we want to see what is the inner structure of a chapter, we have to go out from the whole chapter and first try to see the epitome, the leading idea, or let's say the title, the metaphysical title of a chapter. Because creation as a term doesn't really convey very much, we don't know really what is meant by it, and so we must find a scientific, metaphysical interpretation which we can take as a title for that chapter. Therefore, the first step one always does is that one reads the whole chapter through fluently, consecutively, that one reads it through rather quickly, though naturally still keeping the spiritual tonality in mind, but so that one is not sidetracked by details, by single sentences, by parenthetical remarks and things like that. One should really therefore not investigate every word and every sentence, but just flow through it, spiritually flow through the text, and just listening in if one can catch that subject that repeats itself and repeats itself and repeats itself. Therefore, to catch the tone of the whole chapter, not of part of the chapter. So we do not start with parts. Again, we start with the holistic sense and leave the details aside, because we feel that if we first have the framework of the whole, then the details will fill in very naturally. So if you ever have to read a text, a spiritual text naturally, or also another text, it applies also to any text, it is a good thing first to read it through, just with that listening ear, what is the ever-recurring tone, what is that ever-recurring idea. And as one reads it through, perhaps one is bewildered of the lot of information that one reads and can't quite see what is the leading idea. One feels perhaps a little bit in the wilderness of lots of terms and words, and this doesn't matter. One just repeats that a second time, a third time, a fourth, fifth time, and little by little, as one listens in just with one purpose, to catch the overall meaning that distinguishes a chapter from the other chapters, then slowly, little by little, the main theme begins to stand out in consciousness. Then, when one feels that one has somehow got hold of the main theme, one perhaps epitomizes that for oneself. You just write down a short epitome for yourself so as to fix the finding, even if it's not yet the final finding, but the finding that you had at that moment. And then what one does is that one runs through the chapter again. One reads through the chapter again, and now, listening in, is it actually so that this epitome which one has defined, that this epitome is recurring, recurring, recurring? Or didn't I find the right one? So sometimes you will have to correct it and say, no, I was sidetracked, this was just somewhere along two or three pages a main subject, but it wasn't before nor afterwards, and you have to correct it. You can see it is a tender listening to the main subject that cannot be forced. Some chapters are easier, others are a bit more difficult, especially when they are very long. It's naturally more difficult to see it. And so one tries first then to verify one's own finding as the overall epitome. As one verifies it, perhaps one begins to polish one's finding a little bit, and so it gets more definite and clearer. You can see, only to find out the overall message of a chapter is already quite an engaging work. It's not something that one just does in half an hour or in an hour. It demands one's whole love and care for the text in order to get nearer, nearer to the true meaning. But once you feel, I got it, I have now more or less the leading idea of a chapter, then you make a further step. Then you ask yourself, but why does Mrs. Eddy need 20 pages, 30 pages, 40 pages just to bring out one leading idea? And naturally the answer is that this leading idea can be defined, can be illustrated from various angles. Just as if I have to define a house, I define that house from every side of that house, front, back part, on the side, perhaps from the top. I go all around that house and begin to describe that house. It's still the same house, but various aspects, so that one starts reading the text again from beginning to end, reading the text again and listening now in a finer way to feel, how does she describe that overall epitome, that overall idea, and where does she break that description and brings in another aspect of that same idea? And you mark that perhaps for yourself in the book and say, here is a break, perhaps with a pencil you mark it and say, here the tone breaks, and now the central subject is now described still from another angle. And as one does that and goes right through the book, one finds then perhaps many such breaks. If one is happy with those breaks and feels, yes, more or less I got it, then the next step is that we say, now, how can we define now these parts within breaks? How can one define them in a short epitome? And how can one then define the short epitome with a symbol of our system of reference. Can I see perhaps that that first part is depicting the point of view of mind, and the second part perhaps the point of view of spirit, and the third part perhaps the point of view of soul about this very subject, and you begin to identify these parts through the system. Therefore, they must always be parts of those three categories of our system and should be able to be symbolized through the system, or we don't interpret the text really divinely. Because from the divine standpoint, we have only those possibilities to define them either through the seven or through the four or through the levels. The seven, four, four. And as we do that and begin to define it, then comes the next point. Then when we have the definition, we can and have defined it through epitomes, if it's mind or Christ or what, then we begin to consider our findings. We put, so to say, for a moment the textbook away and say, now, this finding which I found, does it yield a specific ordered presentation of a subject? Does it say run through the word order, or does it run through the four, or does it run through the Christ order, things like that? And in this way we arrive at a interpretation that is system intrinsic, that has to do with the system and is defined through the system and is no more defined through our personal views. If we have done that, and I have, for instance, found that the chapter is laid out through the seventh synonymous term, as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and we feel, but Mrs. Eddy has written quite a lot about mind passage, perhaps a few pages. So you ask yourself further and say, why does she need so many pages just to bring out the mind aspect of the subject? So that at that point you really ask, well, what does she really bring out through the mind aspect? Does she always, in every paragraph, bring out the same thing about the mind aspect? Or does she, within mind, somehow change or vary the mind aspect? And then perhaps you come to the recognition that the mind aspect is given in seven subtones, or in three subtones, so that you suddenly begin to define even in a finer net, in a finer web, in a finer grid, so to say, the presentation of the text, and you suddenly perhaps find out that the whole text is written, say, in seven times seven, and so gives perhaps a very symmetrical, balanced layout of the whole system from the point of view of the seven synonymous terms, which we will see, for instance, in the first part of the tenth chapter, where we find this very symmetrical layout. And in this way you can see that the text is classified and classified and subclassified and subclassified always more and more, until finally every detailed aspect of the text finds its system intrinsic place value and shows forth perhaps a very detailed presentation of the subject. This would be the order of interpreting a text. This is how Chandoli did it with the Bible. That's how I did it with the textbook. And to our great astonishment, we could see that Mrs. Eddy's presentation is absolutely ordered, down to the least detail, absolutely ordered, and that those orders are always scientific orders, that they always are conforming to aspects of the divine system, which naturally gives us afterwards a great sense that being was interpreting itself through Mrs. Eddy as a textbook in a science. Yes, that's the way of the method, how one approaches a text. Naturally, as one gets closer and closer, one with the spiritual meaning of this language of spirit, it is quite possible that such a interpretation of a text is something that flows rather easily after a while. The whole textbook as it is today, I have seen within 3 months at that time, but first I had to be ready for it. For a long time it just didn't make sense, and when I had put away the textbook and was culturing over many years the consciousness in the tonality of the Bible, I think that helped me to become independent of terms and be at the point where the tonality was dominant, independent of those terms, and I think at that point I could easily open up and decipher the textbook too, just as Chandoli has done it with the Bible. So, even if it sounds at the beginning a bit intricate, that method, it's always so, at the beginning one is not the master, but little by little one gets a kind of mastery, and it becomes a flow, and it's just pouring out, so to say.